everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. I'm your host, Dougie Almeida, from Danger Studios in Coral Springs, Florida, and it's a great night. It's the last show before the new year, the end of 2020. Get the fuck out! Yeah, there we go. So much for being clean. And I'm joined today by two funny men that I've known, Mr. Al Ernst.
Hello, buddy. What's up?
And Chris Johnston.
What's going on, guys?
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
You know, I know, Al, you made some comments, because before, usually the week of the show, those who are on the show, we have a little group message on Facebook. And, you know, I may be a little bit anal. I don't know. I try to, you know, I try to send you, like, I like preparation in a sense, you know. You know, I send you guys, like, notes and, you know, we're going to be doing this and that and this and that. So I hope you don't mind me interfering. I feel like, you know, you're looking at it going, what's wrong with this guy? It's a goddamn podcast. You know, we're not launching the space shuttle. What's wrong with this guy? So anyway, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I did look at those notes and I was like, you know what? I better get my act together. It's got to be his business.
Exactly, dude. I was just like that too. I was going, this is the most complete show I've ever been a part of.
did you get my rider?
Yeah. We left some strawberries on the soda side there and some Perrier guys. Well, let's talk. We usually catch up with some things. Chris, the longest I haven't seen you. Al, you and I saw each other probably the last time at McGurdy's, I believe.
Yep.
During one of the contests. I think it was the
World Series of Comedy.
World Series of Comedy Satellite. And that's the last time we were there, and you closed the show that night.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they wouldn't let me be a part of it, so they just said, you know, be funny while we count the votes.
That's a check spot.
Yeah.
And as you were mentioning, Chris, the last time we saw each other was maybe 7, 8, 9 years ago, early in my comedy career at the Bonkers in Ocala.
Yeah, that was a fun night. I don't even know, it was like a saloon or something like that turned into like a country night, and everybody kept telling me like there's barbecue outside, and then they said up the road is John Travolta's airport or something like that. They kept telling me. Yeah.
Yeah.
I made a lot of snake in my boots jokes that night. That was before.
Well, the odd thing was, and I think you even mentioned it, the name that they put on the flyer was the White Rhino.
Yeah.
So my name, that was my old email address. It was like an AOL. Was it the Albino Rhino? And then for some reason, that was my credit, was the Albino Rhino. Like I was like a circus act or something.
I know. I remember seeing you like, I mean, people give me shit for saying the Always Dangerous. Like, are you going to fight somebody? Are you going to make people laugh?
Well, people came up after the show and they're like, so what's your correlation with rhinos? And albino rhinos have to be rare. And I was like, that was just like an email address I used to, in high school, give people the albino rhino thrust in the hallway, and it became an AOL email address.
You know, as an ex-professional wrestler, Al, have you ever heard of the rhino thrust?
I used to run up on him and do a rhino thrust.
I know. I mean, I was just getting to say, that sounds like somebody's finishing move.
Yeah, that's my finishing move, yeah.
He's going for the rhino thrust, you know.
Yeah, it's my... I still my finishing use my wife uses periodically.
So I guess you still have the title.
I mean, I do still have the AOL account. You know, I hold on strong. That's my spam account. So
yeah.
I guess it's still my credit.
You know, you ought to get a belt. You ought to get a big championship belt made.
In Florida, I've gotten the weirdest. There was a place, another Bonkers room in Florida, and there's this big MC. This guy had tattoos on his neck, and he was like, we're going to bring up your headliner now. He's from Orlando. His name is Jersey. Give it up for him. And I was like, no, my name is Chris. I'm from New Jersey, and I'm in Orlando, but that guy's scary as could be. So, sure, that sounds good. I'll be the Albino Rhino also.
Yeah. Well, Jersey is usually headlining most of the Bonkers. So, he's usually out there, so it's probably repetitious.
We look similar, me and Jersey.
Yeah, you guys are like twins.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing like you. I just got my chain of thought. My wrestling move, my finishing move, because my thing was the heart punch.
Oh, I had
because my buddy had the claw.
Right.
He took that from Who's that? Von Bever? Who's that guy? Von
Rasky.
Yeah, the bald guy. He used to come out.
Aaron Von Rasky.
I always loved in wrestling when they would grab their hand and be like,
"Yeah,
you know."
Well, Terry Von Erich, the Von Erichs did it in Texas, but the original one was up in Minnesota. That was Baron Von Rasky.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all the people need to know.
And I like the heart punch because I was a kung fu guy, you know, back to that. And I would do that like Bruce Lee, 1-inch punch, you know, like, Fah! You know, I call it an heart punch. That was my finishing move.
Well, the quick story behind that is that actually literally killed somebody in the ring, had a heart attack from Ock Baker's heart punch and legitimately died in the ring. And they, you know, knowing wrestling, it's like the state fair, man. They used it from on out, you know.
Wow.
Everybody got their nickel back.
That's the one time one guy was there. Look, I'm going to show you wrestling's fake. Watch this match. He goes, I told you it wasn't fake. The guy is dead.
Well, they really went all out. They hired the EMTs and everything for that guy.
Holy shit. I have a joke that I'm still trying to tailor around, but I don't know which is more worthless, a Taco Bell receipt or a WWE referee. Now, I always loved when you'd come out in your opening because, you know, I watched Florida wrestling, Gordon Solie, Dusty Rhodes, Joe LeDuc.
Yeah. Right?
The Briscoe brothers.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys were, Sweet Sugar Brown. I remember he was a guy from Pompano. I remember we were all big. It's like, that guy's actually from near us in Margate, you know. Yes, I kept realizing.
My record was 0-264. and how I got in was really interesting in that I got the job doing, you know, the minor league wrestling ring announcing. You know, so I really got in by, you know, doing what I, you know, ladies and gentlemen, now making his way to the ring area. That was my gig. And they decided they wanted to set up an angle where a bad guy was going to take out the ring announcer and the good guy would, you know, come in and save me. So I ended up having to learn in the business what they call doing a bump. Long story, not that kind of bump.
I was going to say, well, there's probably a lot of that going on back there.
That's a lot of industry type talk.
Yeah. And bad guy, it was Abdul the Butcher.
Wow.
Yeah. And the problem with Abby, who was the nicest guy in the world behind the curtain, but he was, you know, known as the madman from the Sudan. And the only thing he was supposed to do was clothesline me and go down. But he was so into the moment, he literally picked me up and threw me over the top rope onto the cement floor.
It's like Thunder Lips and Rocky. It's all show.
Yeah. And so I get to the back, you know, I'm being helped to the back. I get to the back and the promoter is like, Al, that was great. That was fantastic. I said, yeah, it fucking hurt. That's why great, you know? And he goes, you are terrific, you know? And he said, we need to train you on how to take more bumps so that if we needed somebody. And as it turned out, we were doing a TV taping. And that this was well before cell phones and messages and everything else. Somebody didn't show up and he goes, you got your gear in the back? And I said, yeah. He says, get dressed. You're the Inferno. You're wrestling twice. and needless to say, I got beat up so well that they loved me for a couple of years.
I was going to say that it is an art to be able to take a beating.
Yes. And I could do it, man. I absolutely, you know, if there's one thing I can do is I can take a punch.
Well, you know. You've been in a fight? You ever been in a fight, Chris? I mean, with the albino rhino name, I bet some people said, I could take on the rhino.
Yeah, I used to, I mean, you know, nothing great. Nobody called me Inferno or anything like that, even though I got the ginger going. That would have been a good name, the Albino Inferno Rhino.
Yeah.
You know, just stupid fights. I grew up in like a, you know, urban area, and, you know, I used to have to try to get into fights every now and then. Just to, you know, I got into a fight once in school. I was trying to be a dumb bully and just try to act cool, and I was grabbing people's like food out of their lunches, and I grabbed somebody's chicken nuggets and walked away, and then I got hit in the back with a chicken nugget with sauce all over it. In like middle school, everybody made fun of me, and I'm like, now I got to really fight somebody. Somebody kind of called me out on it. And that's when I learned, you know, eventually you keep pulling out the gloves, somebody's going to challenge you back to that duel, and you better man up, I guess.
Yeah, don't be picking fights, you know.
No.
I had that, you know, being a martial artist since I was young, you know, and I would get into fights. I was just telling somebody I had a few fights that by the time I got to through middle school, people are like, don't fight that guy.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I've seen pictures of you in your gi doing your little stretches and stuff like that. And I'm like, nah, those are the guys you don't really want to mess with.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like, and it's, I love the thing about the Matrix, because if you were a boxer or you're a trained fighter, you know, you see things in slow motion because everything's there, right? I mean, when you do wrestling, you got where people are flying around the ring, you know, you got to get used to that, you know? Right. And that's the way it is, you know? And I loved it. I learned from one of the people I learned, one of my instructors, he would always smile. He'd be kicking the shit out of somebody and he's smiling the whole time. And he'd say, you know, if you smile, you're not angry. If you're not angry, you're not tense.
German guy, right?
Yeah, he's a Polish German.
I took Muay Thai and grappling for a little while, and I ended up, like, we were rolling for a few months. I tapped out this Jersey big state trooper, and I was like, oh man, I'm getting this good. And then just to put me in my place, this little probably 140-pound guy crawled up me like a spider monkey, tapped me like a dozen times as quick as possible, and I learned you never judge a book, man.
Not at all.
Nope.
My wife studied under we studied Hapkido, which is the Korean jiu-jitsu style and fighting. And my wife learned the technique so well that, you know, she can grab you by the shirt and just choke the shit out of you, you know, and it doesn't take strength, you know. And
So what do you train? Was it the same?
Taekwondo, when I got into competition stuff, like when it became the Olympics in the 90s. So I was like, maybe I'll like make the Olympic team. But I always did like mixed martial arts, different. I mentioned this on the show, like back in the day, we'd all go to karate school, and then a year later or two later, it'd close. And then you have to find another karate school, which is a completely different style, you know, or some other type of, so you learn that and they'd move you up. Okay. We're not going to start your white. We're going to start your green belt because you've been training for 2 or 3 years, you know?
Well, that's what happened with me. My guy moved a couple times. And then he moved so far away, and he kept sending me, like, you know, back, I think it was before, like, email was real big, too, before the Albino Rhino. No, it was maybe around that time. And he would send me, like, you know, brochures. I'm like, dude, you're, like, an hour away now. I can't keep – I gotta stop getting my ass kicked and paying you for it.
Yeah, you got to – but then, you know, that the Hapkido was the, you know, the last – because you could do that in the state I'm in. You know, it's a great art. You know, like, it's a great technique where you just kind of grab somebody tight and stuff like that. But I fought Muay Thai, which I love the sport, you know, because I never like ground fighting because I'm not gay. So, you know, I mean, there's something about having to lay around with a man, you know, for 4 or 5 hours a day, you know.
Listen, now, Doug, were you working with a gi or without?
I was naked, but
Greek style.
Yeah. You know, we used to wear
to get to those old Olympics,
the thick gis, you know, the thick, ethnicities and stuff like that, but you know.
So how do you deal with Muay Thai? Because you're not like a lot. Muay Thai is pretty lanky and like long, isn't it? Like
I 10-0, baby.
Nice.
10-0, and the reason that's why the Always Dangerous name came out. My strength coach says he's a dangerous man. You know, 5'9", 215. I think I was fighting because I was super heavyweight, which was 200 up. I couldn't break for 200 pounds. So I had to fight guys like 250, 240, 6'7", 6'3", 6'2". But it was always amazing because, you know, I don't know, maybe just a talent in Florida and the southeast or whatever it is. But, you know, I've been in martial arts so long. So in the Taekwondo and the Hapkido, my roundhouse kicks, you know, I used to break baseball bats with my shin.
Wow.
You know, the school would do a demonstration in the mall, and some guy does a flip kick, and the other guy jumps for three people. You know, I would come in, and they'd hold a baseball bat, and I'd break it with my shin. So, you know, that was my move. And that's why I can't feel my feet anymore, by the way.
You ever go up to play baseball without a bat, and you just go to kick the ball out of the park? Yeah,
go ahead, pitch it.
They wondered why you came to bat in a crouching position.
Yeah, right. Oh,
sitting there in the crouching kid position, ready, pitch it.
Right, pitch.
I tried Muay Thai for a little bit, and it was not. I mean, I liked grappling and sheep fighting and stuff a little more. But a funny story. I've always worked in concert production as well as comedy, and we were in the green room once for Velvet Revolver. It's like Slash and Duff from Guns N' Roses.
Love that.
And Duff is shredded. Duff, this is probably when their album first came out, when they first came around. It's got to be over maybe a decade ago or plus. And me and Duff were talking about it, and he was showing me moves, and he put me in this rear naked choke and put his knee in my back, and his flip-flop shot across the room, and he banged the table, and security came running up when they tried breaking us up, and he was like, no, he's just showing me a move. And I'm like, yeah, he's just showing me a move, but let's stand another one. But he was phenomenal, man. He was very lanky and shredded, and he seemed like he was just built for Muay Thai.
Yeah, no, that's what happened to me in the Taekwondo when I competed in that. I would fight these taller guys, and I'd be trying to come from the outside. But at least, but in the Muay Thai, you can, you know, you get around that. You come in, and then you get in. But my leg kicks were just devastating. You know, people. I wouldn't throw a high kick until the second round, and then I could kick. You know, I can kick a guy 6'5" in the head. You know, from standing right.
You can get over your head, and you can
Not now. I could barely put my foot up to put my sock on. But you know, that's another story.
You know, sorry, for everybody that doesn't know, Dougie said this whole itinerary to us. This, none of this was on there.
No, but we'll get to that. The show's going to be 3 hours today. But
no, this is good.
I am so glad we're following everything that it was.
Yeah, we're following it to a T. Oh, he typed everything out.
Well, you know, like the wrestling thing, I thought was great. You know, and here's the thing about this, Al. Like you said, you were 0-250, right? I love it. You come out and you go, you may recognize me. I was a professional wrestler. I was the opponent, which I still laugh every time I hear. It's fucking so funny. And if you watch wrestling, you are like the Washington Generals of the wrestling world. Like,
yes.
Like, you know, this guy's going to lose. The guy would come out and the other guy looks like an Adonis. You know, and then this other guy comes out, looks like he just delivered the mail.
Yeah, and you came out, you placed your stagehand union card on the side of the ring before you jumped in.
Yep. You know, I wrestled high school and college, and I was much more of a, you know, not as much into the mixed martial arts as much as just straight, you know, amateur wrestling. But when you were trained to be a pro wrestler, the way they trained you was they trained you in a way that you learned how to do it for real so that you could learn how to pull it back and not hurt anybody.
Yeah.
That was the way you were trained. And I was working a comedy club in Mobile, Alabama. And this guy was just harassing me through the entire, I don't believe any of that stuff, you know. And this was the time before we were really, you know, letting on to what the business really was about. And I mean, he harassed me into the parking lot, leaving. Yep. You know? And just like you're trying, you know, you're trying not to, you know, don't get into it. Just let him. And finally, he says, put one of those things on me. He said, do that pile driver. I said, all right.
In the parking lot.
Yeah, parking lot. I put him in a pile driver and essentially dropped him on his head in a gravel parking lot in Mobile, you know. And, you know, he's just sitting there holding his head and it's bleeding. I said, well, there you go. You can't do it because you told me to do it. And
it's a good thing he was probably missing teeth already anyway, right?
Oh, yeah. Listen, dude, these guys were, you know, you're that guy from wrestling, ain't you? You know, yeah, okay. No, I mean, it was just literally that kind of stuff. So those are, I mean, that was, listen, it was anything to make a buck. And when you're working comedy clubs in the South, especially Atlanta, Charlotte, those places, and your buddy was, you know, Dusty Rhodes or Ric Flair or one of those dudes, and they would come out to see you perform. Well, listen, I could feel, you know, I was every club owner's favorite feature act.
Yeah.
You know, I could feel, you know, the word would get out, and, you know, a Wednesday night of 50 people would turn into 200 paid because, you know, Ric Flair was in the audience watching me work.
Well, as long as they don't come into the show like it is a wrestling match, you know, like walking in, woo! Yeah. Oh,
Flair did. Yeah, Flair did. Flair did. But, you know, the rest of them were, you know, really pretty cool. You know, there was a part of it just like, train. You know what I'm saying? You know, you don't really go after somebody, you know, you're not trained to do that.
Yeah.
You're trained to be confident to know that if it happens, you can take care of yourself. And, but boy, there are some people that just wouldn't let it go. And then, okay. You know, let me dislocate your elbow for you. So
people, I had the habit, like, when people find out you know martial arts, they always say, well, what would you do if this happened? You know what I mean? What would you do if I did this? And, you know, you're like, well, you know, and you try to explain it. They're like, oh, see, I would hit you. So after a while, I said, you know what? I'm ready. So anytime anybody ever asked me, what would you do if they went like that? I'd just punch them in the face. Like, why'd you hit me? I'm like, you were going to ask me what I'd do if somebody tried to hit me, and I'd hit you before you hit me. That's what I do. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I did that to a fellow comedian. I mean, you know, because he, you know, Rick Flair and Steamboat used to do the chest slaps until, you know, basically they break skin on each other's chest. And he just thought that was crazy. So he, you know, he'd come up and slap me like we were working together on a ship, and he slapped me. And I was like, dude, you're piling up points here. And one time we got into an elevator and he just didn't nut. And I just leaned back and put him against the wall as hard as I possibly could. And I mean, just to the point where he couldn't even catch his breath by the time we got to the floor we were getting off on, you know, and I said, don't slap me again. You know.
It's funny. You watch these contests. You watch these slap contests, the open hand slap contest.
Oh my God! Yeah.
And these people, like, who signs up for this? You know what I mean? Like,
oh, it's horrible.
You know, I'm going to get in there and you know, I think about all the work I'm getting in my neck right now, the decompression therapy and the adjustments and all the shit I got to do, the acupuncture. Yeah, I want to go into a contest where somebody smacks the shit out of me. Yeah. But it's funny what you said, Al, because you're true. Like, people say, you ever get nervous when you spar with other black belts in the school and thing like that? No. I never worry when I'm sparring other well-trained athletes. Exactly. I worry when I get in the ring with a yellow belt.
Yep.
That wants to try to throw a roundhouse kick when I'm doing something else and ends up kicking me right in the balls.
Right. They're going to prove. Yeah. You guys both know. I mean, you know, obviously you both been in a business in other ways. You know, it's the ones that don't get it and aren't trained or a little bit trained and thinks they can prove something that you go, you know, what are you doing? Why are we doing this? Because, I've had more than one drunk name comedian come up to me and go, oh, you know, I heard you're a wrestler, you know, do this. And, you know, I don't think those arm locks, you know, putting you in a Kimura really, you know, all right, you really want to feel how it feels? Okay. You know,
I know one wrestling move every young kid did if you had a brother and you put it on your younger brother was the figure four.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
That figure four. And then you learn how to reverse the figure four.
Right. Turn it over.
And I remember you'd sit there. And I remember one time my brother, I had three older brothers. So one of my brothers goes, Doug, you lay down, put your legs out. I'm like, all right, I put my legs out. He's like, oh, I'm going to put this. I'm like, what are you doing? Oh, just listen to what I'm saying. What is this? I'm going to show you the figure four. And then you're like, ah.
Yeah, who was the figure four? Was like the British Bulldogs guy or something, wasn't it?
That was Flair, Jack Briscoe. You had several. One of the British Bulldogs.
Junkyard Dog do one too or something? Like it came up through every generation. So everybody had their
figure.
It's like, you know, depending on what generation of a basketball or baseball fan was, you had your guy.
Yeah.
Everybody had their figure four.
Well, my all-time favorite was Jake the Snake Roberts, DDT, you know. Yeah. I watched him. We were working a match in New Orleans one time, and I watched him put a DDT on something that missed, and his forehead just went slamming straight into the cement next to the ring. And I mean, he was out like a just dead weight. And the match was supposed to go to the what we call the finish, where, you know, he was going to get back in the ring and pin him. And, you know, now he's trying to lift like 300 pounds of dead weight into the ring to roll him in and finish him. And he's got this gigantic lump on the front of his forehead. You know, it was incredible.
So much mishap on, you know, and people lost their lives with that crazy stuff. The movie The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke, pretty good depiction of how wrestlers' lives are.
Well, you know, for the ones that don't, I mean, for the ones that didn't take care of themselves, which was a greater portion of them. I mean, you know, hey, you guys know it's like being a comic. You know the comics that we know that get that break, get that little bit of heat, they get the show, they get some money, and they believe it's going to happen forever. You know, that, you know, they think they're going to be at that level forever, and suddenly, you know, you're not that guy anymore, and now all of a sudden you spend everything you've got and you got nothing left, and you know, you're working in a deli, living in a trailer, you know, and that's it. I mean, there's a lot of big name wrestlers I know that, you know, are working Instacart, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look at what's happened in our industry. Like you said, you know, even like the comedians, like I think, you know, as bad as this year has been, and we're glad that 2021's coming, you know, like it's going to be a difference. But, I've been able to work. God, thank God. You know, I kept early in it. I had dates that stuck around. That was good. So to be able in front of a live audience, but there's people that aren't doing anything or aren't be able to do anything. There's a mass exodus out of LA. You know, we had a show last night in Delray Beach. Jimmy Schubert was a headliner. Jimmy Schubert left California. Now he lives in Florida. You know, a lot of comics have left California, come here to Florida or Texas and stuff. And who's in New York? You know what I mean? The people that are still living in New York. I mean, what are you going to do? But I feel glad. I'm blessed in the sense that that isn't my income. You know what I mean? Comedy isn't my source of income. You know what I mean?
Well, but Dougie, you're smart, because this is what even post COVID, this is what the future is going to be. I mean, you're going to somehow you've got to monetize what this kind of thing is going to be. And the shows are going to be special event shows live where you bring people in to be funny with. I mean, you know, I mean, that's just the nature of what our business is going. I mean, it was going that way anyway, but only thing that COVID did was accelerate it. And, you know, I, on the other hand, you know, as you well know, was heavy duty on the cruise ship industry side of it. And you talk about an exodus of, I mean, you're talking to just with the people I'm working with, you know, you're talking 200 guys probably and girls that were regular making exceptional money went from that to nothing.
Yeah. You know,
in a matter and not in any kind of, like, it wasn't just a downward trend. It was like,
it was a cliff.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Off a cliff. Yeah.
Yeah. It was an abyss. Now you have other sources of revenue, Chris?
Well, I was trying to hedge my bets, and I also work in the concert business. I do concert production, which worked out well for me. Concerts are completely gone. Comedy is fairly gone.
You didn't diversify. You didn't diversify your revenue streams well, because it's like the woman who came to me in 2005 that said she was quitting her job to start selling real estate. And a few months later, I found out you bought 4 condos, right, to try to flip. Unfortunately, they were all in the same building. And I said, you know, you may have wanted to go
move around a little bit.
Each one assessment hits one building, go boom.
I mean, I've worked in concert production for, I don't know, 20 years. So I've always done that, and always, you know, been on the production side of it, you know, dealing with lighting and audio and stagehands and everything. And then the comedy side of it too. And then as of the last 5 or 6 years, I worked heavily with the Impractical Jokers, and all three sources of revenue came to a screeching halt as of March
I was going to say, by the way, how'd that work out with getting hooking up with those guys? You knew them or previous relationships?
It was kind of like I used to open for Artie Lang a bunch. I opened for him a bunch, and they came to the show, saw me open. They came to see him and actually saw me opening. And then through my other job, I ended up promoter repping one of their shows at a theater early in their careers. And they were like, hey, you're the guy to open for Artie, right? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, I do this also. Yeah. And they're like, oh, you were great. We got to get you in the rotation. And then, you know, it took a little while. And then their manager got me into the rotation. And I started being one of the guys that opens up for them. And then I double dip as I deal with production with them too. So
right. I believe it.
Yeah. Okay, but it was great. We're supposed to have 40 shows this year. We're doing, you know, I got to perform in arenas and amphitheaters with those guys. And it's amazing. And then, you know, all three sources just came to a screeching halt.
That's horrible. The arena. Tell me about the arena, because I've never performed in an arena. I saw some of the photos. At the timing on that's got to be, because when you play a big room, you got to change the tempo and what you do.
Yeah.
But an arena.
I mean, yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's totally different. Like you said, the timing is totally different. I speak quickly. I have to really pace myself, slow down. So if I'm going in there and I'm doing like 12 minutes opening for them or whatever they got me doing, some small, you know, they're the main event. I'm going up there in front of 8, 10, 12,000 people. I got to quickly win them over. But, you know, if I think I got 10 minutes worth of stuff in a 12-minute set, I look down and I only get about, you know, 8 minutes of it in because it's just slow. You feel like the laughs come in waves. They're slower waves. It's great as a novelty, but it's a little too big and echoey. Like a lot of – sometimes we'll do like these old theaters, these old plaster theaters that you don't even need a microphone for.
Yeah.
Four levels of balconies, and you can feel like the pounding of laughs are coming in from every angle. And those are amazing. Amphitheaters are tough. They're outdoors. Like you feel like everything, the laughs just kind of go away. And no matter how well you did or you think you do, you're always like, you know, the tight comedy club where people are kind of stacked on top of each other and you just feel the reverberation. Like there's still nothing that beats that.
Yeah. The tight. Low.
You're right. Yeah. It's a rhythm. I mean, I've had just dumb luck been able to tour and open with, Kenny Loggins.
Nice. And,
you know,
I'm all right.
Between work and I'll tell you what, being a comedian and opening for a music act versus being in a straight comedy show, and you've always got that stupid ass guy from the radio station that emcees it and comes out and goes, I'm Joe from the Morning Zoo, and are you ready for Kenny Loggins? And everybody goes nuts and he goes, but first, you know, and then
we got a guy that's going to make you laugh. Comedian. Ow.
Yeah. And you can just, you know, you can just watch, you know, the whole crowd, you know, just, you know, you, I mean, you're so far behind the eight ball walking out there at that point. And then you have to, you know, then you win them back over. But I mean, it is a slow, I mean, like you said, man, you couldn't have said it better. It's that slow tempo that you can't pull your club set that you're used to, you know, hit, you know, on punchlines.
I mean, it's the reverberation. Right. You have to make sure you enunciate, you gotta talk slower. Feel it really does mess up your rhythm until you really start to get used to it a little bit. And then dealing with like those guys too, you know, they have kids, they put 16 plus recommended age on their ticket, but they have younger kids that come out. So you have to, play with that a little bit. Fortunately, they do have IMAG. They have the two big video walls on the side of me. So you can look up and you can see that they can kind of see me. And there are camera guys in the pit that'll take, you know, if I do any kind of crowd work, which is very limited in those kind of settings, you know, they'll pick up the people that I'm talking to so that at least the people way in the back of the arena can kind of see who I'm referring
gotta,
to. Otherwise,
that's, it's just gotta be hilarious doing crowd work with like 20,000, 30,000 people. Hey, you, who,
it
no,
is.
No, not that
I
guy. That guy.
I see the camera guy. Yeah. Right. He picks up the wrong guy. Yeah. Unless the camera guy is there. And, I mean, that's the other thing too, is you got to be conscious of all this in front of all these people. If I know that there's a bit that has a tag that's a punt, like that I can refer to the crowd in, I have to keep an eye out, know that camera guy is there and he's going to be able to focus in on the person that I can call to. And if I look up and I see that he's got the timing or the director is cutting to that scene at that point on that IMAG wall, then I'll continue with it. Otherwise, I got to abort mission, and you got to do all that quickly in this setting. It's and nuts.
I mean, you're just doing that in your own calculation.
Yeah.
Well, you can't let them, hey, you want to do crowd work, work on top of the fish tank at the Bass Pro Shop that I got.
And I mean, sometimes it's not really crowd work. It's like preset crowd work that you'll do.
Right,
You'll find the guy with the red shirt, or you'll find, you know. But I got to keep, you know, a lot of times if there's like a lot of times nowadays they'll have like somebody doing the signing, the sign language stuff. And, you can at least point to them and make the same joke and then they'll have it on the IMAG. But, you know, for the most part in an arena setting or an amphitheater, that stuff's few and far between, man.
That's funny. It's almost like you got to perform your comedy in Morse code.
yeah.
You know, to put it out there. Well, I'm glad that, you know, this is the lives we lead. You know, we've got professional wrestlers being thrown out the ring, you know, I don't know anything crazy you've done, but, you know, you're a responsible guy, you know, family and everything, and keep yourself busy. I read stories and I wonder why people do certain things. Like, I'll ask you guys some quick questions. You guys get on roller coasters?
I love roller coasters. Yeah.
Yeah. I figured. Yeah. Al, you don't do roller coasters, right?
But, being a fat guy, I can give you the most recent roller coaster experience that I had. Which was the Busch Gardens. I took my little brother to one of those Halloween Fright Night deals.
Yeah.
He had to ride that roller coaster, and the seat on that roller coaster is smaller than the coach seat on an airplane. And luckily, you know, I'm pliable, so I was able to get into the seat, but I couldn't pull the safety bar down, and I was positive that they were going to do the fat man walk of shame, where they would say, but instead they were like, they called a team of these little pith helmet assholes over and they start pushing the safety bar down on my chest, yelling, "Breathe in, sir, breathe in."
And don't worry, we got the crowbar when you get back.
Honest to God, I look like a Play-Doh fun house. I mean, because I have fat coming through every part of the place, and it finally clicked in, and my 11-year-old little brother is looking at me going, isn't this great? And I'm like, I literally passed out the minute the roller coaster started upward, because the rest of the blood in my head was gone.
Yeah, I don't do that. I have too many, you know, little neck issues and stuff from fighting and things like that. I can't even deal with those reality, you know, the simulation rides, because I end up getting really whacked out. Matter of fact, I won't even get on a ladder. Okay, let me just be honest.
Really?
Fuck a ladder. Like we didn't do Christmas ornaments this year. We're like, no, because I'm not going to get on a ladder, right? And now it's always great the day after Christmas or so when you realize I didn't do any. I don't have to worry about taking it all.
Clean up work.
You guys tell me, and maybe up in Jersey it's a little bit different because of the colder weather. But Dougie and what is the whole Christmas deal? I mean, people are literally putting theme parks into their subdivisions. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I like a more. I'm a Disney fan, so I go with a Main Street USA. I go like the white, they got to match too. It's got to be like warm white, not cool white, and warm white. Like I got, you know, I go a lot. I actually won a online contest for my neighborhood this year. I was one of the,
Good. Look at Mr. Homes and Gardens.
I told my dad, I was like, I learned everything I know about exterior.
Who would have thought the albino rhino would be winning home decoration?
Oh, Christmas decoration. Yeah. HGTV, here I come.
Chris, I got a question for you. How long did that, when did you start, and how long did it take you to put it up?
I usually, I'll cheat it, because the weather patterns around here have been changing. They're a little weirder. So if I get a warm day anywhere around Thanksgiving time, I'll jump it in before. I think I got in a couple days before Thanksgiving, and I spent the day on the ladder putting stuff on, you know. And throughout the course of the weeks up until about Thanksgiving, maybe a week or so before Thanksgiving, I, you know, added a bunch of stuff to the bushes, checked the lights, see what wasn't working, bought new lights at Target and rolled back up the lights that didn't work like they were brand new and returned those, you know, did the whole deal. And about a week.
You are a better man than I. Yeah. Now, here's the second question. Sorry, Doug, I know this is your show, but second question, how long do you, I mean, for that much work, I would never take this stuff down.
Yeah.
So my sister-in-law, she took them down the day after Christmas. I'm like, you're out of your mind. You got to leave up till my plan is usually they got to be up and on and ready to roll. The neighborhood's got to be able to see them. I got to be able to bless the neighborhood for with my beautiful lights by Thanksgiving evening. And then the day or two after New Year's, I'd take them down.
Yeah. Unreal. You guys, man, if I did that much work on something, we'd be having Easter lights. Yeah. We'd be having Labor Day lights.
Yeah, well.
But I take pride in it, too. And they got to look, like I do a joke about how, like, you know, these cheaters, they go out there nowadays, they put a projector in the front lawn. They got a bunch of laser dots. It's like 1,000 amateur snipers are taking them out. And I'm like, no. It's not a Christmas till a hospital visit's involved. You got to get on the roof. But, you know,
yeah.
That's how my dad was. You know, my dad did the same thing. He had the Charlie Brown lights, and he had to get up there. And I think he took a couple falls, but you know, if I didn't have kids, I don't know if I would do it as in depth. But my kids,
yeah,
kick out the kids, and 6 years old, so I got to do it.
Definitely something you do for the kids. Like I remember, like you just said, my parents used to put it up, and they were to be arguing, and they put it up, and we were kids, and then eventually they left them on all year round.
Yeah.
They never took them down. They would last a couple of seasons, and you have to replace them. You know, but I get it. You know, here's what I do. My Christmas, I take a candle and I put it in the front of the window in the front by my house, and I light it.
Nice.
Like Christmas. And you know,
it's like vigil for your.
That's it, man. You know what I'm saying? And because Christmas sucks for me. I mean, it's me and my wife. You know, we don't buy each other shit. You know, because the minute I buy it on my credit card, she knows. So we just wait till after. Like, I'm going to get a new laptop after, you know, I'm going to go get a new laptop and she's going to get some, whatever, you know, that's it. Who's got time? But if you got kids, it's a big different story. Well, the reason I brought this up is because 12 people die on an Iranian mountain by avalanche. There's been a lot of inclement weather around the world. So, you know, I can imagine if somebody came to me and said, hey, Doug, we're going to go hiking. You know, we're going to go climb some mountains in Iran. I'd be like, well, you know, I don't know. Because, like, the last time I did something like that was when my wife wanted to go parasailing.
Right.
Right. Last time we were in Belize. And I'm like, all right, you know, it can't be that bad. Dude, I almost got sick. Yeah, because the guy's like spinning, you're going back and forth and shit. And I'm like, this is not good for me.
Yeah, you won't hear me say I climbed mountains or I ran. I'm not doing either one of those anymore, yeah, man.
We're going to run. You know, but these people, you know, they go, like, they're going to go, where are we going? Are we going to go to, we're going to Colorado? No. We're going to Utah? How about, California? Where are we going? No, we're going to Iran.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to go someplace where the State Department has recommended us not to go to.
Yeah.
You know, let's make sure we go to one of those banned countries, you know?
Yeah, guys, when we get to the top, let's put this American flag on the top.
Yeah, it'll be great. We can see the nukes from way up there. It'll be awesome.
Yeah, they'll love it. Then you can bring, oh, wow. I mean, that is just, who thinks of these things? I mean, really, who wakes up and thinks of that?
If I get the hobby, like there's hobbies, golf, you know, boating, you know what I'm saying? Hiking, you know, you go. But to go mountain climbing, if your hobby can actually end in death, then, you know, you may want to find a new hobby.
Which in Iran, it probably will.
Well, you got a better chance in Iran of walking down the street and it ending in death than, but now.
They got killed in an avalanche. They only had a dozen AK holes in them.
There you go. Well, now see, here's the question for both you guys, because you both work in entertainment. And Christian, you know, you've done promotion. My thing is, like, when I started working cruise ships, I'd work with these balancing acts who would, you know, like, their big deal would be to stick one finger into a champagne bottle and be able to, like, do a handstand, lift themselves up, balancing themselves on a champagne. And I'm going, who thinks of that? Who walked the street and went, you know, if I could put my finger inside this bottle and
well, you're in a wrestling game. A lot of wrestlers come up. I've seen wrestlers tie up. What wrestlers look up in the sky and go, wow, those fluorescent lights. If we wrap a dozen of them together and hit each other in the back, that would be great for us.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, that whole era, I don't even want to talk. You know, that was just yeah, that was ridiculous back then. But, I mean, you know, you just think about who comes up with these. I mean, who was the original person way back in the 60s, like on Sullivan Show, now I'm dating myself, that said, you know, if I spun these plates on a, you know, on some kind of bamboo stick, that people would just be totally entertained if I could get 12 of these plates.
Yeah. I was just talking about that on the show a few weeks ago. It's like, remember those, like Eddie Brill was on the show and we were talking about that, those odd, like, you know, these variety acts, right?
That, right.
You know, or the guy who would get on a unicycle and juggle, you know, or, you know, like, wow, you know.
We had a girl in my high school that she was on David Letterman or something, stupid human tricks. Right. And she would spit a piece of gum out and then suck it back into her mouth. Yeah. But the trick was, she showed us she had one piece of hair that she would put the gum on it. You couldn't really see, and then spit it back. But, you know, before she revealed the trick, every guy is like, oh man, we got to hang with her.
Yeah. I need her number.
Yeah. Girl. But, you know, we had a plate when I first started on cruise ships in the early 90s. We had, you know, some old dude who was, you know, the you know, guy who would never leave entertainment, who was a literal plate spinner on a ship. And so every time the ship would move, 10 plates would fall and break, you know. Like, we're at sea, you know, there's 10-foot waves, and you're trying to
spin a plate.
Yeah, you don't have control of your environment.
Well, that's like magicians. Have you ever worked at like magic acts and they're telling you like they have traps in their body with all these doves and stuff? And you're like,
yeah,
oh man, this sounds awful.
Hey, here's the great one. We had one guy that was a live on act and, you know, talked about indulging in his food. He gained so much weight that he broke his magic box that he disappeared in.
Nice.
And so he put on like 30 pounds during his contract. And, you know, the big ending was that he would disappear and he got in the box and you could hear the plywood cracking.
He should have just switched it up and made it so that he runs behind like a thin pole and you could still see him sticking out from both ends as disappearing.
I know.
The fail disappear.
It was just, I mean, it was hysterical. I mean, people were on the floor because, you know, literally, it was so, I mean, you're, and the whole box fell apart, and the guy just standing there, like, ta-da!
That's so
excuse me, guys, how far out sea are we? We've got to stop at Home Depot again. I need some more plywood.
I need a big box.
Yeah, let's stop at the next island. I had some bad experiences working comedy shows with magicians because the only thing that ever made disappear was the audience. I don't know how you guys feel about this, but they're actually, you know, marijuana is being legalized all over the country and everything, and you know, but now there's still some people trying to stop it. Dangerous side effects of smoking marijuana. Now, I don't know if you guys smoke. You don't have to admit that. I do smoke. Occasionally, I'm not like I used to. I smoke as often as I get on a ladder.
Nice, only for Christmas.
Yeah. But dangerous side effects. Now, I don't want anybody to admit anything, but if you want, you can admit if you do. So, but here's, you know, I'm just going to call bullshit because, first of all, number one, you might feel nausea and vomiting.
Now, they give you some wrong stuff.
Yeah. Now, I've been smoking many years. And I've never gotten sick or vomited from smoking. Who's got a compass in their hand? Somebody's fiddling with a.
I'm sorry. I got a shitload of batteries. I was literally just setting up the light.
You need a fidget spinner. number two.
But I can't, Dougie. I can't tell you who in my family does ache, and that is my. My 88-year-old mother got her a medicinal card for legal. Nice.
To help it, right? To help you from being, like, it helps me when I feel a little, you know, nausea. Like, look, it helps cure it. So I think that's bullshit. You might feel anxiety. Well, no, duh. Everybody does when you start smoking. Who hasn't had a paranoid attack when you start getting high?
Right.
See, the paranoid, I mean, I used to when I was younger. I don't really that much anymore. But I would always get anxious of, I'm like, is this really working? Is, I don't even know. Maybe they didn't give me anything that was really that good. This, I don't know if I feel anything. Let's go to the gas station, get some snacks. And that's how you knew it was kicking in once you started to get those munchies.
Yeah.
Right. But that's, you know, that was the anxiety I used to get. That's it.
Hmm. Yeah. I remember I freaked out one time and I didn't want to go to work because I felt like people were pounding on my head. Number three, you might feel hunger. Well,
yeah, there you go.
Of course you're going to feel hunger. Is that a bad thing? I mean, it is if you're a magician trying to fit in a box.
Yeah. Old 30-pound box smasher.
Yeah, the key is you got to eat a little bit before you smoke so that you don't get the bad munchies. What else was there? Let's get to that. You might feel sedation or impairment. Well, that's why you do it.
Yeah, I was going to say. Why is that a bad thing?
I think you're kind of getting what you're looking for. I want to feel a little sedated.
Right.
A little indigo. And then, you know, a little impairment. Yeah, I want to stop thinking about shit. What else was there? You might, impairment, what else? You might develop psychiatric health concerns.
Well, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Schizophrenia. What do they mean?
Psychiatric health concerns.
You might develop psychiatric health concerns. You know any potheads that are freaking out all the time?
No, not unless they.
Well, here's for you guys. Would you rather perform in front of a group of manic drunk crazies or a bunch of people stoned?
Drunks, you don't want to deal with.
Yeah, no,
who wants to deal with drunks. What's I ask you guys this, bachelorette party.
Oh,
it's the worst. Yeah, that might be the worst audience.
Thank you.
A bachelor party.
Yeah,
yes.
Because you know,
suddenly they think it's their show. They're entitled. Yeah. They got a big day coming up, and it's like, it's the elephant in the room because they're wearing these stupid sashes and everything else. And you're like, if I don't say anything, they're not going to shut up, and they want to be noticed. And if I do, you almost lose them.
And they all got the glasses with fake penises on them, some sort of fake, right? The lollipops,
the straws, and stuff like that. You know,
I like dick. Okay, we get it, honey. You might feel dry mouth. Well, that's why you get a Slurpee. There's nothing better than dealing with dry mouth than a nice 7-Eleven Slurpee. As long as
we used to go to the Exxon gas station and get the like 32-ounce Gatorades. Those would.
The big
put them in the freezer and let them turn into like a slushy.
Yeah, now we're getting creative, MacGyver. I love nothing better than the slushy. They had slush puppies, remember slush puppies?
Yes.
Yeah.
You might foster decreased sperm health.
That could be good.
Well, if you have four or five kids running around, you may want to smoke a joint to stop that from happening. So those are the dangers of smoking weed. So legalize it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it doesn't sound any more dangerous than hiking in Iran.
Exactly. That's a lot more dangerous. Why don't they ban that? By the way, guys, it's that time of the show where we're going to... News is a joke.
Nice.
The news is a joke. This is where three comedians on a Zoom show go over the news and make fun of it. Wendy's employee reportedly shot over argument about extra dipping sauce.
I get it.
They never give you enough dipping sauce.
Nope.
Right?
But you got to go in, and that's why I miss about going in, because you got to be able to secure and your own. You got to be able to grab your own from the little basket thing.
Right. Right. But my question is, Wendy's? I'm more upset with Chick-fil-A. Those are the ones that. They don't give you enough dipping sauce.
Chick-fil-A?
Yeah.
You try to ask him for an extra pickle.
Oh, buddy.
They'll think
I eat a Chick-fil-A sandwich, I navigate around and I look and I'm like, oh, I see the pickle bite coming and I get myself ready. I don't want to get the pickle up front. That's like a premature situation.
Really? You save the pickle? You bite around it?
I bite like a moat around the outside of it, and then I wait. I get to that pickle in the middle.
And I thought only fat guys thought like this. But, you know, it's like when I'm eating a sandwich like that, right, and then let's say you have the bread over it, and then you have a big piece of chicken kind of coming out the side, Do you eat that part first?
No.
Or do you save that part sticking out for the last bite?
Hey, that's the big end. That's the big kahuna right there.
Yeah, that's like, so here's another thing too, is this is where I get anxiety is when I'm in a situation like that and I get to that last bite, is if the kids are running around or something, that's when I get like, guys, you got to leave me alone. Because if I drop this bite that I've been working around, this whole sandwich, that's like being the Falcons losing the Super Bowl. Like, I don't want to drop, this is the one that I've been working for this whole time, kids.
It's almost like you put all those lights up and all of a sudden one doesn't work.
And they all go out. Yeah, I worked hard for that. And I should have made that in advance.
Well, there you go. That's a headline. Now, this is a great story. China lowers age of criminal responsibility to age 12. I guess they got so much crime in China, all these young Chinese kids, 12 years old. So if a 12-year-old, you know, steals a Slurpee, then he could be seeing jail time in China. What do you think?
Going to work camp.
Yeah. You think that's it?
The first thing I think of is locking up the Indiana Jones kid, man. 12.
Dr. Jones.
Dr. Jones.
I'm only 12 years old.
He's got a Yankee hat on.
Yeah. China has lowered the age of criminal responsibility for murder and some other serious crimes from 14 to 12.
They were at 14 prior?
Yeah. I mean,
what are we in the United States? Isn't it 17?
Well, I think if the crime is of such a bad crime, it doesn't matter. They may try them as an adult. I think it's 14 to 16 years old.
See, right? I try to think, because it's hard for me. Obviously, we're all removed from it, but like, I have a 12-year-old niece, and if she killed somebody, like, she's at the age where she's responsible enough to like babysit my kids sometimes for a short amount of time. You know, she's got to know she did something wrong. I don't know if, you know, I mean, she's not like, oh, I'm only 12. She got to be responsible for that.
Yeah.
She got to know something's wrong.
Yeah.
All I know is when I was 12 years old, I was trying to figure out if I liked using Vaseline or soap.
Thank you.
Which end? No.
Yeah, the issue whether to lower the criminal age responsibility came to the fore after a case last year in which a 13-year-old boy confessed to police that he had killed a 10-year-old girl.
Damn.
Wow. I guess you have to get deep. I mean, you know, maybe look at the malicious intent and all that stuff too to see, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, what if you're the parents? You know, you want this kid.
It's awful. Then they would have to try me. I would have to kill that kid. The kid killed my kid. I'd have to kill that kid.
Yeah. Right? If somebody killed your kid, little kid, you know, hey.
I have to give him a heart punch.
Give him a heart punch, man, or the DDT.
I could kill a 13-year-old with a heart punch.
If that won't kill him, maybe soda will. In this country, refill ban for sugary drinks. No more refills on your drinks. Now, I would normally say that's not fair. But then as I've been touring the country and eating in all these fast food places when I'm on the road, and you watch these families that are getting Obamacare and all this free health care. Meanwhile, their kids are going for their fifth refill of Cherry Coke. You have to polishing a Big Mac and a chicken sandwich and a large fry. Right? That these kids are going back for soda, 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 soda. Meanwhile, I'm paying $1,500 a month for health care. You know what I mean?
But all your packages are going to be delayed. You ever stop at a truck stop at one of those places and you see the size of these things these truck drivers are filling up?
Yeah, there you go.
Well, like just so, although when they go in and...
These truck drivers, they got like 100-ounce things. The passenger seat is for their drink, man. They strap it in.
But you know, don't you think like you go into these new machines where you can pick your, you know, like the Coke machines where you got like every drink that Coke makes.
Oh yeah,
you know,
they got the digital chemist in there mixing it up for you. Yeah,
you know, my question is why are we letting people go back? I mean, you know, how did that in the first place? You can get 900. I mean, I've taken the same cup to a movie 15 times and never paid for it.
Nice.
That's good.
Those days are gone. No. Yeah, well, so, Doug, I got to ask, is that, which country is that? Because
that's here.
That's a year? Don't you think they got other things to worry about besides how much sugar we're drinking?
Yeah, I think there's a couple other viruses going on.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing. That's important.
I'm trying to see where. Yeah, it's definitely here. You know, well, you know, Michelle Obama wanted to have. They tried to change the school lunches and stuff like that. But
I think that's how you know the country is in a good direction, when they're looking for stuff like that to deal with. They tried it in New York for a little while. They stopped selling like normal, the larger size stuff. And you would have to just, you could just go buy two of the,
I was going to say
40 ounces. You go buy two 20s.
By the way, this is in England.
Oh, yeah, all right.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to say, wasn't that a Bloomberg thing? A Mike Bloomberg thing about.
Yeah, that was this.
Bloomberg. How long do you, I don't want to get to it, but do you think De Blasio, you think he'll, I mean, this guy's going to be strung up somewhere eventually. They're going to find him beaten in an alleyway.
By both sides.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody likes him on either side.
Nobody likes neither one of him or the governor. And they don't like each other, which is a good recipe.
Yeah, that's good. Just fire each other. Back before the pandemic, we used to travel a lot. But how'd you feel about this? A passenger flight in Nepal lands in the wrong city.
Yeah, I saw.
Isn't it bad?
But it was like, I could see it happen if it was like, hey, we got a problem here. Like, I was on a flight once and, you know, the landing gear was not coming down. They had to make an emergency landing. But if it's just some guy that was like, oh, man, I was thinking I was going back to my uncle's house or something like that. You know, that's.
Yeah. I'm like, you go into the cockpit. What'd you have, the map backwards?
Wait a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought, wait a minute. We're not really. We're not yet. Portland, Oregon or Portland, Maine? Which one?
My ways froze.
It's funny you said that, because the first time I did shows in Portland, I had to get a rental car because I was doing this like Northwestern tour thing. And I ended up getting a rental car, and I said, I went on there and it was expensive, and I went back. Oh my God, it's so much cheaper all of a sudden. So I rented the car. Well, it turns out that I rented the car from Portland, Maine.
Nice. Instead
of Portland, Oregon. You know, listen, sometimes these things happen. Who of us have not gotten off an elevator and walked out and realized it wasn't the right floor?
But you still act like you're on the right floor.
Yeah. They must have moved the whole store.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, you moved to the first floor.
That's right. I've done that in more hotels than I can tell you. And I wait, I walk down the aisle knowing that I'm going down the wrong floor until the door closes, and then go back and press the button, you know.
And then they end up coming back up. What are you doing? Oh, I forgot my keys.
Yeah.
This story, woman turns up pregnant while in a vegetative state. Now, this happened a few years ago as well. So here they are in a hospital, and this woman's in a coma state, and all of a sudden she's pregnant.
Wow.
Well, the first thing we can eliminate is all the female staff in the hospital.
Oh, maybe.
And then you have, I mean, think about the lowlife that goes into the room and says, you know what? It's kind of lonely. I can't afford one of those sex robots.
Her monitor gave a couple beeps. It sounded like a yes.
Yeah, I took the beep as a as consent.
I took the beep as consent. I love that. You know what, buddies? Who has the money for GHB these days? You know? So, you know, let's just go ahead and wait for them to do it themselves. We don't have to put anything in their drink. Who needs the Bill Cosby these
days? Yeah.
Maybe it was Jesus coming back.
Yeah, I'd like to order her a Cosbypolitan. A woman was raped and got pregnant all while she was in Hacienda Healthcare Facility in Phoenix, Arizona. No one had any idea that she was pregnant and were stunned when she went into labor last week and asked everybody to sign her baby shower list.
I would get ready to say that Hacienda Healthcare, she's going to be living off of that lawsuit for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Or a family will, but she won't be able to spend it. You know, somewhere there's a guy working there who's showing, he's asking for extra hours. You know, you got to find out who wants to, oh, no, I work late, man. I work late. can, you know, I work late. I work extra hours, sure. I can stick around and mop the floors twice.
Yeah, I'll turn I'll close the place down.
Yeah, I'll lock it up. Corey, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead and go home. I got it.
I mean, a condom, I don't know. I guess, would you wear a condom if you're making love? I don't know.
Those beds aren't even comfortable. I don't know. I guess you could adjust the angles on those beds pretty easily. You know, they move around. They got a lot of contractions.
No. Oh, dude, that is just that thought. Even just that thought.
It's like trying to pick what's his name off the ground after he smacks his head into the ground.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I'm saying? Our last story was a great story, and you know, I don't know. Again, you pride at the work you put in your house there, Chris, with all your decorations and stuff. But you probably saw the video of a Kentucky man using a flamethrower to clear the snow off his driveway.
I literally saw that, and then I keep getting articles. I mean, like things that pop up in all my feeds for you connect to a propane, and they're like, you can remove snow in it. You start, who the hell is you? This is the Home Alone contraption, man.
So what's he at a gun show? He's at a gun show, and he's going, you know, I can use this flamethrower. No, yeah, just clear snow out of my driveway. Wow.
It makes it a lot funner. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the idea of having a good tool, right? Like, you know, if you got to do a job, like, if you have a good tool, it's, you know, it's a lot easier, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, but, you know, Dougie, you comparing it to the right wrench, to having the correct wrench.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, your neighbor gets, like, a new snowblower, and then your other neighbor gets, like a quad with a thing on the front, and the next guy gets a pickup. You come out there with a flamethrower, you win.
That's it.
Like Running Man.
When you own the neighborhood, people are just dropping shit off at your house.
Imagine if you get gigs like that. You're like, hey, I see you got that flamethrower. You want to come over? I'll throw you a 20 spot. You clear my driveway for me.
Well, it was amazing. Like when I went up to North Carolina, South Carolina, because we're looking for a new house. And I wonder what it would be like to live in the mountains, like Henderson, North Carolina, just outside Asheville. Beautiful homes. You know, you have a deck outside and you're living in the trees in the mountain. You know, it's beautiful. But it was funny. One of the houses we went to look at, the lawn guys came, right? And they didn't have lawn mowers. They had odd leaf blowers.
Yep.
They don't have yards to cut. The yard doesn't really grow in the mountain. You know what I mean?
No.
It kind of just mats down on the – and then, but they come out and they just blow the house with leaf blowers, you know?
That's great.
Yeah. But look at this guy. This guy may go, hey, fuck the leaf blower.
I'll screen cap and tag, because literally I would say probably a dozen times this week I've had things pop up in my newsfeed about getting a flamethrower, little flame thing that you attach to a regular a propane thing for your grill, and you could flame throw snow.
Yeah, man.
It's all the craze. It's all the rage in 2020, 2021, you'll say.
That is the greatest story. Well, we just don't do that kind of stuff in Florida, you know?
Well,
you guys got your own headlines of Florida that usually top us.
Yeah, we've got plenty of idiots, you know what I mean? Like, I was a Florida idiot almost. I told the story the last time I was in Colorado Springs. It was snowing hard all day, so I stayed in the hotel room. I'm a Florida guy. I have Chuck Taylors as sneakers. I can't be walking around slushy and slidey streets with fucking Chuck Taylors. So I stayed in my room, and I go downstairs to get in my rental car to go to the gig, and there's like 5 inches of ice over the top of the car. I'm like, well, what the hell do I do now? You know, I got to call Uber. I got to get an Uber. I'm like, no, I'm not a pussy. I'm going to do this. And so I got the ice scraper that the rental car company gives you. I start scraping away, and I'm like making sundaes on the side, you know, in an Uruguayan street. I'm an ice shaver. And I'm thinking, so I almost went back to the hotel and got a hot pot of coffee or the hot water.
Right. It's a flamethrower.
Yeah, it's my version of a flamethrower. And I was going to, I should ask this guy, hey, guy, bring your flamethrower. I got those ice on top of my car. Just be careful. Don't scratch the paint.
Yeah, don't hit the gas tank.
Yeah. So, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, I was about to walk in. I go, that doesn't seem like a good idea. Then I realized I'd probably shatter the window. And then, of course, it came back to me. Oh, the travel, the one of these travel channels. Yeah, you know, I remember watching it. It's like, oh, if you ever get ice on your car, and it's to just turn the car on and turn the defrosters on, that ice will just come sliding off. So thank God I averted a major issue. Anyway, gentlemen, that's all we have time for here on the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. I want to thank you fellas for joining us here on our last show of 2020. Thank God it's
thank you.
2020.
Thanks for sending us out with a bang.
That's right, guys. And hey, man, we always like that you guys are performing. What, you got anything coming up, Chris?
I got a couple things in January and February in Jersey. Uncle Vinny's Comedy Club. I got another show for JJ Comedy, another comedy, couple places I do. But just check out everything at Chris J Comedy. It's been off and on. A lot of stuff still canceling and coming back. So just check out at Chris J Comedy on any social media platform and hopefully come on out to something.
There you go. And Al, I know you got some shows in Florida coming up this week.
Yeah, tomorrow night I'll be in Daytona Beach at the Hyatt Regency doing a special show. Then on New Year's Eve, I am at McCurdy's Comedy Theater in Sarasota, Florida, where we are just about sold out at COVID standards at 50% occupancy, but there are still a couple tickets available. And then I make my third ballpark debut. We are playing minor league baseball stadiums, and I will be at the Atlanta Braves Cool Today Stadium right outside of Port Charlotte, Florida, on January the 5th. And, yep, we put the microphone on home plate, and this is my third quote unquote stadium show, and looking forward to doing that as well as all these Zoom spectaculars.
There you go. By the way, tomorrow night in Fort Lauderdale, I'm going to be at Gatsby's Joint, opening up for Kyle Grooms. We'll be closing the show. That'll be a fun thing. And I got some dates coming up, thank God, in January, February. Let's see what happens. Guys, God bless. Happy New Year to you guys. 2021, let's bring it back stronger. Wish you and you guys all the best.
That's right. Happy New Year, guys. Good to see you. Good to hang with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, pleasure.
You got it, guys. And next week, all new show, all new year, all new show. I'll have Jimmy Schubert here and Paul Agata on our show next week. So don't forget to follow us and join our fan page on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Wake Up With Dougie Show and on Twitter at Wake Up Dougie. God bless, everybody. Good night. Sleep well. And don't play with the flamethrower.
Nice. Later, guys. Wake up!